The silence in the dining room was profound when Merlin finished his explanation 2 hours later. The faint, icy sigh of the winter wind, plucking at cornices, battlements, and gables, tapping invisible fingers on the closed window panes, was clearly audible, despite the solidity of the palace's ancient stony bulk. Narmon and Olivia Bates sat side by side, holding hands as they had from the moment Merlin began, and Olivia's eyes were huge dark pools in the lamplight. As they clung to the communicator, the compact holographic projector, and the bare wakizashi lying on the table before her. Merlin wondered, looking at her, which of his bits of story-proving technological evidence she'd found most convincing. In some ways, he suspected it had probably been the wakizashi. The communicator and the projector both looked alien, strange, even magical. The wakizashi didn't, yet she'd watched him use the impossibly sharp battle-steel blade to whittle long slivers of iron off the poker he'd selected from the dining room fireplace tools. The fact that the wakizashi didn't look alien, yet obviously was, had probably made it even more impressive. "And I'd better make damn sure that poker disappears for good," he reminded himself. "Better for the servants to wonder where it went than find it chopped up like a Christmas goose." He felt a brief pang at his own choice of similes and wondered if it was his recitation of humanity's true history which had recalled it to his thoughts. Narmon's expression gave away much less than his wife's did. Her wonder and the ghost-haunted eyes that went with it were plain. Narmon's eyes were merely hooded, thoughtful, his lips pursed as if he were pondering an everyday conundrum rather than a complete and fundamental shift in the universe he'd always thought existed. "Well," Caleb said quietly, at last, into the silence. Olivia's head snapped up, her eyes flitting to the Emperor like startled rabbits. Narmon simply looked at Caleb, but his free hand reached across to join the one already holding his wife's. He patted the back of her hand gently, reassuringly, then looked across the table at Merlin.
"It wasn't Her Majesty's bodyguards who saved her life, after all, was it, Sajan Merlin?" he asked calmly. "Not entirely."
"Not entirely, no, Your Highness." Merlin's voice was low, his sapphire pika eyes dark. "Without them, I would have been too late, though, and it's my fault so many of them died. I dropped the ball badly that day." Charlian stirred in her chair, as if she wanted to dispute his verdict, but she didn't, and Narmon smiled faintly.
"I've just been replaying that entire morning in my mind."
His tone was almost whimsical.
"Here I thought you'd explain so much, when it turns out there was so much more you didn't even touch on."
He shook his head.
"I have to admit that a few things make a lot more sense now than they did then, though. For one thing, I've been persistently perplexed by the extent to which their majesties seem to think so much alike. Mind you, I've had enough experience of how well a man and a wife can learn to read one another's minds. And..."
The skin around his eyes crinkled as he smiled briefly but warmly at Olivia.
"Of the way they can still surprise one another, even after years. But you two..."
He transferred his gaze back to Caleb and Charlian.
"Haven't been together that long, which is why you've amazed me more than once by how smoothly your actions and decisions have coordinated, despite the fact that you were months of travel time apart. The way Her Majesty decided on her own to come home to Chisholm after the assassination attempt, for example. That was exactly what I felt needed to be done. In fact, it was what I advised rather strongly that very morning, but it had never occurred to me that she might actually do it so promptly. Now I understand how the two of you have managed it."
In fairness to Caleb and Charlian, Your Highness, they didn't have the advantage of instant communication until after the assassination attempt, Merlin pointed out, and Narmon nodded thoughtfully.
"You're right," he agreed. And they were operating almost that smoothly even before that, weren't they?
Yes, they were, Caleb said rather dryly.
Which brings me back to my original question, Your Highness.
I won't say it doesn't come as a considerable surprise, Your Grace, Narmon acknowledged. Of course, I suspect you'd be a bit disappointed if it hadn't. The odd thing, though, is that I don't think it's really shocked me.
It hasn't.
There was a faint but distinct tremor in his wife's voice. He looked at her quickly, and she gave a slightly shaky smile at the concern in his eyes.
I can safely say it shocked me, she continued, and she turned her eyes to Caleb and Charlian. I have to admit it disturbs me as well. Even with all of Sage and Merlin's evidence, you're asking us to believe a great deal. Or perhaps I should say to disbelieve a great deal. You're not talking about just the group of four anymore. Not just about corruption in the church, or about evil men twisting God's message. You're telling us the message itself is a lie. That the faith to which we've trusted our souls, the souls of our children, is nothing more than one enormous falsehood.
There's steel in that woman's soul, Merlin thought respectfully. She's telling the truth when she says she's shocked, but she's cutting straight to the core of the entire story, what really matters to her.
That's exactly what Merlin is telling you, in part, Stainer responded before anyone else could.
She looked at the Archbishop, and he smiled sadly at her.
The Church of God Awaiting is a lie, the enormous falsehood you just called it, he said. But the men and women who created that lie built it out of fragments of genuine belief in God. They stole pieces of the truth to build a lie. That's what's made it so damnably, and I choose my adverb with care, Your Highness, believable for so long. But as Merlin said when he began, there really isn't that much difference between Eric Langhorn and the group of four. Aside from the fact that, whether we agree with him or not, Langhorn truly could argue that the very survival of the human race depended upon the success of his lie.